So for us, wearing our researcher hats, where we not only audit the CCAT data regularly, we also want to engage the staff using the tool to discuss their feedback and dive into why we're seeing what we're seeing in the data. So almost like focus groups, right? Where we can ask them, what about the CCAT's working for you? What's not working? What could we improve?
Welcome to CCAT in Practice. I'm your host, Danielle Malangoni. This is part 3 in our series on how to effectively implement the CCAT, an initiative funded by the Bureau of Justice Assistance. Today, we're going to consider the importance of data collection when using the CCAT, and to help us with our discussion, I have the pleasure of welcoming Lenore LeBron and Tia Pooler, who oversee data analytics and applied research at the Center for Justice Innovation. Lenore and Tia, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So let's just jump right in. And why don't we start with some context? Can you describe your role as it relates to the CCAT?
Sure. As researchers and data analysts at the Center for Justice Innovation, we work closely with program teams as well as the technology team to ensure that the CCAT is being offered in the field, that data is being tracked in our case management systems, and that the systems flag the items correctly. We help to assist the program staff with the rollout of the CCAT to various programs, as well as modifying the tool as needed for those programs. Once data is starting to be collected, we can pull information, run reports, and analyze the data to help inform programming, as well as sharing the information about the needs of our clients that our programs are working with.
So why should we be collecting data from the CCAT? Some jurisdictions might be thinking it's hard enough to have all these questions to add into our intake process. Why do we need to collect the data? And what data should we be collecting?
Well, that's a great question. Using the CCAT and collecting data of the outcome flags is beneficial to understand the needs of the clients that are going through your program. This can help the program know what kind of services they should look to offer, and allow the program to be more responsive to the population it's serving based on the data collected for the whole group over time. The tool itself takes away discretion on the part of the staff to determine if a need is present for each person, as the flags are based on the same questions for all the clients that answers the tool. There's no interpretation needed on the part of the staff, and therefore you can compare and analyze across all clients without concern for internal biases on how someone could possibly flag a client. We like to say collect all the data, right? Collect everything you have. But in terms of what should be collected, we would say any of the CCAT questions that are being asked, as well as the outcome of the flags. This way, the data can be analyzed for each question over time for various purposes and populations, and you'd be able to see why certain clients are flagging or not flagging for certain needs. This could help to inform programming and even funding more specifically.
And how can this data be captured? We had another conversation with Sarah Thompson from the Spokane Municipal Court. And for our listeners, if you haven't had a chance to check out that podcast, that's part 1 in this podcast series. And she talked about building the CCAT into the municipal court's existing data management system. So this is obviously one option, but how else can you capture the data?
Yeah, it's a great question. So all of the CCAT questions and flags can be built into an existing case management or survey or assessment system that's already in place. So you're not just conducting the assessment on paper. Ideally, they'd be incorporated into a system you're already using, into an existing workflow. So for example, you could interweave the questions into a current intake or assessment process. And that way, for the client or the person being asked the questions, they'll sense a flow that makes sense, right? With similar types of questions being asked together. Also, by incorporating the CCAT into an existing case management system, those responses and flags can be connected to other information about that individual, right? So they can be referred to throughout the individual's time with the program. For example, if you collect data about service connections and outcomes in the same system, you can more easily follow up and ensure that those CCAT documented needs are actually being addressed. And on a macro level, by connecting your CCAT data with other demographics or case information in the same system, it also allows you to aggregate that data and look at trends for certain populations of interest. The last thing I'll add is just to mention that ideally, if possible, we found it's best to automate the generation of the needs domain flags based on the question responses. So through like an algorithm behind the scenes, if you will, It's just more efficient and avoids human errors in manual calculations. But of course, that requires technical resources. So that's something to keep in mind.
Okay, so for our non-researchers that are listening, can you break that down for us a little bit in layman's terms?
Yeah, so when I say algorithm, I'm just referring to the scoring that's part of the tool and flagging for those domain needs based on the question responses. So if someone answers an employment-related question a certain way, it might flag as a need. And if you have a system that can automatically generate that flag based on the responses, you just do away with those sort of manual calculations that can introduce interpretation and human errors.
Thank you for explaining that. As a researcher, how do you audit the data and how do you use it to engage the folks that are actually administering the tool?
So here at the center, we store our internal CCAT data within our centralized case management systems. So it's actually very easy for us on the data team to create regular reports that tell us, you know, if all the clients who should have been assessed actually were, and look at things like missing data. So we look for trends in CCAT data audits like, are there certain questions or sections that are commonly missing or unknown? That might imply that staff are avoiding certain questions, maybe because it makes them uncomfortable or the question wording is confusing. So then there might be, you know, additional training or language tweak that's needed. Or if, say, most of the missing data and unknowns come at the end of an assessment through a data audit, there might be some time capacity issue or assessment fatigue or something else that needs to be addressed, for example. So for us, wearing our researcher hats, where we not only audit the CCAT data regularly, we also want to engage the staff using the tool to discuss their feedback and dive into why we're seeing what we're seeing in the data. So almost like focus groups, right? Where we can ask them, what about the CCAT's working for you? What's not working? What could we improve? And while we generally keep the tool in its core format, we have tweaked versions to work for certain programs. So for example, removing criminal history or risk score elements and using it only for identifying needs. It's also important through data audits and reports that go back to the folks administering the tool to connect that work of data collection to the program responses in the larger program itself. So for example, we might engage staff using the tool with reports showing the proportion of referrals given in response to their clients' identified needs through the CCAT, something very applicable like that.
Tia, can you unpack that a little bit further and give us an example?
Sure. So for example, if you know that 40% of your participants in a program or jurisdiction have employment needs, at an organization level, that potentially informs investment in employment services, right? And prioritizes forming partnerships with employment-focused community-based organizations. Also summarizing resources and referral information for staff and training your staff on appropriate responses to that domain in particular. So using it to inform programming and resource priorities is really key, particularly if certain prevalent needs are associated with certain outcomes that that program aims to impact.
Lenore, you mentioned this a little bit when you were talking about why we should be collecting the data from the CCAT, but can you talk a little bit more about how the data gleaned from the CCAT can be used and in what other ways?
Sure, yes. Using the data from the CCAT, in addition to, as Tia just mentioned, talking to the staff and showing them how they're actually referring clients based on their needs, we can also use it to see what type of programming the staff should be working with or external providers that the staff should be connecting clients to. This way that they know that the programming that the clients are being asked to attend is actually going to addressing the needs that they have come in with. This also will help in them describing their program to other stakeholders and funders for their program. Knowing what type of population you're serving will possibly open up other funding sources and also increase possible referrals to your programs if stakeholders know, oh, your program can serve people with certain types of needs and is currently doing so. So for funding purposes, communication purposes externally, but then also making sure that internally your clients' needs are being addressed in a timely fashion.
So many reasons to collect the data. So many. So what are some of the best practices for collecting and auditing CCAT data?
Well, first and foremost, we always like to say, do not collect it and forget it. Make sure your program somewhere, someone in the program can have a role whose responsibility would be to look at the data and to have these ongoing conversations with program staff on what the data is showing. These conversations can ensure that accurate data is being collected, but also that timely navigation of any issues that are arising from staff can be addressed, as well as using that information about your client's needs in a timely fashion as well.
Right. And I would add that CCAT data entry training is key. That's something our team is responsible for. And, you know, if this can be incorporated into also like clinical or practice focused trainings on the assessment in general, that's ideal. That way folks are learning about the what and how and why all at the same time, more sort of holistically. Another best practice that we touched on before is just to gather continuous feedback, both from staff using the tool and clients, if possible. This will help your program assess how the tool is working and make any changes or additions as needed. It's also just beneficial to provide regular spaces to gather that feedback and to present analyses of the CCAT data back both to the staff on the ground using the tool and leadership. So, you know, both people making decisions related to their individual clients based on the CCAT results and to the people making organizational level decisions about resources and priorities and, you know, as Lenore mentioned, external partnerships and funding.
Lenore and Tia, thank you so much for having this conversation with me today.
Thanks, Danielle.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just a reminder to our listeners that this is part 3 of our CCAT in Practice podcast series. And if you want to hear more, definitely check out parts 1 and 2 to learn how the tool is being used in other jurisdictions. To find the rest of our podcast series and all the corresponding webinar trainings, you can visit our website at innovatingjustice.org. Thanks again.